Million Dollar Sundays are here to stay. Playing a $1 million tournament is now a regular thing with the Million Dollar Sundays. Coming on Sunday, August 2nd at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, we're hosting a $1 million guaranteed, no-limit Texas Hold'em tournament, where the winner walks away with $200,000. This is our third Million Dollar tourney with more lined up in the future. You're going to love the Million Dollar Sundays tournament with daily free rolls to win your seat for free, tons of satellites to qualify for a fraction of the cost, and free bank wires for the top nine finishers. Don't miss your chance to win part of the $1 million guaranteed. Qualify today for the Million Dollar Sundays Poker Tournament. AmericasCardRoom.com.
Okay, welcome to Ask Alex, episode 50 on the OneOuter.com podcast, sponsored by AmericasCardRoom.com. If you want 27% rate back, then just click on one of the AmericasCardRoom.com adverts on the OneOuter site and you will automatically qualify for your rate back. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at OneOuter.com, join the Facebook group, facebook.com/group/OneOuter. Alex, long time no speak.
Yeah, it's good to finally be talking with you. Oh, by the way, guys, for that rate back, I started a new deal where if you sign up for America's Card Room and you sign up for the rake back and you make a deposit and you write me at assassinatocoaching@gmail.com, write me your screen names, your login names, all that good stuff, I check with my guys and find out you deposited, then I'm going to send you one of my webinars for free. It's your choice between dissecting the donk bet, you flat too much, and that's a check raise, fool. Now, a few things here. The first time I announced this, one guy said, "Hey, I signed up already. Can I get one of these webinars for free?" And then I said, "Yeah, give me your name. I'll check, you know, that you deposited and stuff." And then the guy was like, "What? You can check if I deposited?" So don't think that me and America's Card Room are not in cahoots. That's part of, you know, sponsorship is you work together. So don't try to work me over, because all you're going to do is frustrate my very angry assistant Marine. And also, it's not for all three of the webinars. It's one of them. We've already had a couple of those emails. Yeah, go ahead. And, you know, I definitely took 2 minutes to create an account. I never intend to put money on it. Now give me all three of the webinars. That's not how it works. You know, if you want to play at this site, it's one of the few sites that's still decent enough to give you rake back. And the action's pretty sweet, man. I've been cashing in those tournaments like every night, and then like I've been playing cash there, and like there's some good cash players, but there's a lot of like bad. I mean, I had one guy running like 77-21 yesterday, just like, you know, drop kick shove like A6 off for like 100 big blinds. So, you know, there's still like there's still a lot of good action out there. So yeah, be sure to sign up, man. I'm playing. If you guys want to see the site in action, I'm playing a lot now on America's Card Room. I'm building up my bankroll on America's Card Room. It's just like when I go to America's Card Room, I make money. When I go to Stars, I just hate myself for being abused this way and not leaving the relationship. But yeah, go check it out on my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/TheAssassinato.
Cool. So you've been in Vegas, World Series. Give us the cliff notes and or go in depth how far you want to go on anything interesting. Well, let's hear your Vegas trip.
You know, Vegas was a good time this year. I feel like I don't have enough words to describe it because it was such an experience. And I think that's a pretty good thing. I got to do my first book signing, which was probably like a life accomplishment. And like four people showed up, and I think like actually a couple of them were actually there for me. They didn't just, you know, like, "Hey, I want this book." One of the authors is there. Oh, okay, cool. And then, you know, that was cool. Like, I got to meet, excuse me, sorry, one sec. I just inhaled a little fleck of pollen, and that was threatening to make this podcast quite a bit more disruptive. But no, it was cool. You know, like, you know, when you're just like sitting in your house all day, like writing, and playing cards, you kind of just think, like, well, I'm a dweeb who mouths off about poker and stuff, and it doesn't really affect anyone. And, you know, like, actually getting to meet the fans and stuff was a pretty big deal. And then, you know, I got to do the Thinking Poker podcast, and then, yeah, I mean, it was just a good time. I played a lot of tournaments. None of them really went that well. I saw David Copperfield. I went to the Pinball Hall of Fame, which was everything I ever wanted it to be and more. It even had the crotchety old man, just like every arcade had when I was a kid, you know, like screaming at everybody. I went to see the 4th of July fireworks at like a, it was like this casino. I can't even remember where, what's that one called? Red Rock. And it's like, it's just outside of Vegas, but it had a much more like a homey, it felt much more like, I think the word's homelier. I don't know. Like it felt more
like an old school.
Yeah.
Homely.
Yeah. It was cool. Yeah.
Friendly.
Yeah, exactly. It was mostly locals and most people were pretty cool. And I get tickled pink by seeing, like, I love my country, man, but the whole like red, white and blue t-shirts and like the eagles like spread across like the chest and the you know what I mean, like I was just like, all right guys, you know. it was fun to see, though. It was one of those things you got to see. You know, I saw Adam Carolla live. I saw the sexy Cirque du Soleil. I did the biggest Ferris wheel in the world. Went to the Wax Museum, you know, chilled at an Italian cafe, and, you know, got to do a lot of fun stuff. So, you know, poker didn't go as well as I thought it would, but there was the Venetian 5K I got pretty deep in. It was pretty the Venetian 5K was pretty cool, but at the same time, you know, it was pretty like debilitating going from like 30K to 90K, 90K to 30K, 30K to, you know, 120K, 120K to 30K, 30K to 150K, 150 to 40, and then finally 27 and out, you know. So it was kind of, if you guys want to go to my blog, pokerhadrush.com, I deconstruct like a big bluff I did that I think a lot of people, like, if they saw it live, they weren't really into. But I think I explained myself pretty well there. And I think that you would I think it would be pretty interesting to most people, or even if you're just, like, a fan of poker. But, yeah, it was a good time the whole time out there.
Good, good. Well, you sound like I didn't hear anything negative about Vegas there. So
there's negative stories. I mean, like, I don't know what's up with these people. I'm just through trying to figure it out. Like, I don't.
Yeah, you found your peace with it.
Yeah, I mean, there's this stuff, like, I just don't get. Like, I mean, the one story that comes to mind is, like, a guy threw out, like, 250. I had, like, a 500 chip, like, I was, like, twiddling with. So I, like, threw it out there. And the dealer. So this is probably, I would argue, this is the easiest change you will ever make as a dealer. You simply grab the 250 and throw it to me, right? And the dealer decided to grab the 250, grab my 500 chip, and throw it into my stack. And I went, hey, this is wrong, right? And then I threw my 500 back out there. And then the guy next to me started yelling at me. He was like, you should just put your exact chips out there if that's what you want. And then the dealer went, like, yeah, you know, just put out 250 and it'll be fine next time. And then I was like, hey, you know, I was like, we should be. And then I said to the guy next to me, it wasn't even part of the issue. I was like, what the F do you care, right? I was like, seriously, you're not even a part of this. What do you care? And then he was like, you're slowing down the game. And then the dealer started barking at me. Yeah, I was like, you know, you want to talk about who's slowing down the game? Let's talk about a dealer who can't do basic math. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, let's talk. I mean, there was stuff like that. And there was like, I don't know, like, but I mean, it's one of those things, like, I mean, I have, like, half a dozen stories like that now that I think of it, but, you know, it wasn't as bad as other years. Like, you know, the taxi drivers were much more complimentary, I think, because now they have to compete with Uber. They can't just be asses about everything and long-haul you everywhere. But, yeah, I mean, like, I did get long-hauled. I did get, like, attitude from a lot of different people. I did have people like acting really weird, but it's one of those things, like, I don't know if I'm just getting too old to the point I just don't care anymore or whatever. I just, you know, it's whatever.
I think you get to a stage where initially it frustrates you because you want to try and like talk them round into like whatever, and then you get to the stage where you realize some people just can't be saved.
No, it's pretty true. No, I've given up on a lot of these people. And there's just like, you know, I think I found a way to like make fun of people. Like, in every time I retaliated, that was the thing that I was at. Because, like, there was a part of me that was just like, let it go. But, like, now I'm like, you know, these people need to be put in their place because this is, like, this is just bizarre. Like, I mean, to give you another example, like, there was a guy next to me named Alex, right? And this guy was, like, folding. He was like, how many chips do you have, Alex? And then I started to answer, and then the other Alex started answering, and then I laughed. I was like, you got to specify which Alex. There's two of us here. And the guy got super angry, and he said, the one in the hand, bro, right? And I was like, you know, you weren't in the hand, right? And then, but this time, you know, it used to be when I was a kid, I didn't know what, you know, do you just yell F you? Are like, what do you do? But this time I was like, all right, dude, like, all right, dude, you seem like you're having a great time today. Let's see how that works for you, right? Or something to that effect, right? And, you know, the kid busted out about 5 minutes later. And then, you know, you have to say something. Like, the one that was really audacious to me, and tell me if this would just be weird to you, like, I think this is an American thing, like, just the schadenfreude and, like, just complete social retardation. I was, like, I got done playing at the Pinball Hall of Fame, and I was there for a good 6-8 hours, right? And, I mean, like, I just played every game you can imagine. I was having fun, right? I was just like, oh, my God, now I remember why I play games for a living, right? And I was in like a really good mood. I came home and then I was like, oh, you know what? I got a couple bucks on my Rio card. I'm going to go to the Rio. I'm going to grab something to eat and I'm going to watch Daniel Negreanu final table this main event. Right. And, so I walk over there and like, I have a coffee in my hand and I have like my cell phone and, I was sitting by the side. Right. And, somebody opens the door to the main room and, like, holds it for me, like, quite deliberately holds it for me. So I'm like, oh, I better get off this wall, right, while this guy's holding it for me because he obviously saw I had something in each of my hands. And then I got into the door, and I looked in the room. There was no one there. There was a security guard just staring at me, like, just roid head. And I was like, oh, you know. Are you open? And then, like, I should have said, oh, you're not open yet, but I wasn't thinking. And then he was like, no, we're not open. That's why the door's closed. And then he slammed the door in my face, like, while kind of pushing me out. And then, like, the 8 people around, like, walking around, like, laughed at me, right? And, like, laughed, like, pretty deliberately. And, like, I didn't take it personally, but when I turned around, like, the first thing that came out of my mouth was, well, F you, too. Right, to, like, everybody else, right? Because that was a pretty deliberate, like, F you, right? And, you know, like, the chatter died down and nobody said anything. And I was like, good, I'm glad you feel bad. Because you should. Because this is not cool, you know what I mean? This is not how you treat other people. And I was like, you know, and I was real, in all of these cases, pretty much I used profanity. But at the same time, it was like, you know, these people need to be told, like, this is not acceptable behavior. Like, when I was a kid, if I laughed at someone who was just in an unfortunate circumstance, my mother would have yelled at me. The short Asian man on the block would have yelled at me. My dad would have killed me, you know. And, like, my dad wasn't exactly, like, Mr. Sensitive, but he was just, like, a decent dude, you know what I mean? So, like, I don't know, these narcissistic people, I have given up. I kind of, like, when I go to Vegas, I pretend I'm on an alien planet with people who are not quite human, and that does help me quite a bit. And, like, but at the same time, it's, you know, I'm going to put you in your place.
Yeah, you can't leave the house, Alex.
No, I can't. I really can't. No, I just can't, man. No, I can't in Costa Rica. People are... The thing I like about Costa Ricans is even if they don't like you, they pretend to like you during, like, business interactions and stuff. It's like, look, I know you don't have to like me. I know I you know, a lot of people I piss off. But, like, at the same time, like, if we're, you know, if we're in a business interaction, just play, you know, just pretend for 2.5 minutes and we'll go on with our life. I think that's the mature thing to do. And then we do.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Let's nice segue into, we got some listener feedback in. It's not a question.
All right.
It's some comments and constructive points. So I'll read it out verbatim. It's, yo, when I first stumbled across your podcast a couple of months ago, I had no idea who Assassinato was. And I was like, what the fuck is up with this Alex dude? And the guy I can't understand. I seriously thought it was ridiculous with all the non-poker rambling, etc. But then I ended up kind of laughing at it and realizing that Alex was actually a boss at poker and Scottish Dude was actually super sharp and witty. Now it's my number two favourite podcast. Sorry, guys, I'm a thinking poker addict. And I've binged the most recent 20 shows and I'm going back to the start. Love it. Anyway, my recommendations are, as much as I love the rambling because both you guys are hella smart, I do prefer at least 50% poker-related stuff. My two cents. Also, like others have mentioned, it kind of sucks when you guys talk about being over poker and stuff. I hear you, but I think most of us listening still love poker. I always appreciate a good discussion of the future of poker, however. Barry, dude, you also should invest in a new microphone or something. Just drop the cash and get it to the next level. Alex sounds good, but Mike is kind of fuzzy and bassy. I say go for top quality sound and go all A-game, because you guys have a great podcast. Keep up the good work. Rad in SF, which I assume San Francisco.
This is that was actually pretty constructive. I was going to give him a hard time, I felt like it because I love making fun of people who are like, no, it's funny to me because in Vegas, everybody was like, dude, I love the One Outer podcast, but do you know what sucks about it? It's like, okay, like, you know, why don't you tell me first, like, why? Actually, you know what? I don't even care. Like, it's like, I feel super awkward when we get, like, compliments in real life. But, yeah, no, I'm going to get the new microphone. I'll make Barry go get one. Lord knows we pay him enough. But,
I replied to the guy and I said, I think the main thing is it's over Skype. It doesn't matter. I mean, today sounds clear and great, but no matter what we do, once you get into like an hour Skype call, sometimes it just goes, you know, and Google Hangouts and all these other things are just the same thing.
Exactly.
So, I mean, you have to do remember that like I'm in Scotland and Alex is the other side of the world in Costa Rica and it's just, you know, it's free. So, you know, it's good enough that people can still hear it all the time. You know, I've never had a show where people have been, I can't understand anything going on there.
Yeah.
A lot of it will be my accent.
No, your accent's pretty clear. Well, I mean, like, to be fair, I've always thought of, like, One Outer Podcast as just you and I talking, you know what I mean? So, like, and I think that's kind of been what's attractive to most people is it's like two people on opposite sides of the Atlantic who have gone varying places in poker and have differing life experiences, but still have some common threads, you know, just talking cards in life. And I think it's more of a real conversation. I think that long format is what drives most people to the podcast is that long format. And we're going to improve the audio. And as far as, like, the 50% poker, like, we do try, but at the same time, you have to remember a lot. I realized in Vegas a lot of our fans are pretty casual, and, like, when I'm really breaking it down, I think, you know, that's fun to do once in a while, but, like, you can really lose people that way, too. And then, and the other thing is, by the way, dude, I'm not over poker anymore. I don't know. I went through in Vegas, I realized I was like, I am really enjoying playing poker, like really enjoying it. And like my only I said, like, as a joke, like I was all in. Right. end of a nation, I was like, I would like to continue playing poker. And the whole table laughed, right? Because, like, who says that during an all-in, right? Or I was like, dealer, ace, I would like to continue playing poker, like, as deadpan as I could. And, like, but at the same time, I was thinking, it's really true. I just want to have chips, like, deep in a tournament. If we ever sound over poker, it's categorically, I just found out, like, you are running worse than anyone I've ever seen in one of these databases. And it was like, okay, cool. You know, which, by the way, I haven't been playing enough to complain about that. But, you know, certainly when you show up and get your head smashed in, it's for tens of thousands of dollars, you kind of go, eh, you know, this stuff can piss me off, man. Like,
yeah.
But, you know, it's, you know, over the last, it's one of those weird things because it's like, I didn't grow up, like, wanting, like, of course I really loved poker when I found it, but it was a brief thing. It wasn't like, you know, in sixth grade, they were like, what do you want to be, Alex, when you grow up? It was like, I want to be a poker player, you know? It was, it just kind of happened. It's just, like, what I'm good at. I don't know. WPT Magazine described me as, like, they were joking, but they were like black coffee drinking hipster who happens to play poker. And then I was like, you know, I'll give you that. You know, I do act over everything and, you know, whatever, you know, but at the same time, I've realized recently, you know, I love this game. Like I love to play cards. I really do.
And I realized recently as well that I want to play more as a hobby as well. It doesn't need to be if you don't play for a living, then, you know, forget poker sort of thing. I can still enjoy the game playing it. And for the first time in a while, I took a little interest in the World Series result. I was looking at, like, the odds, you know, day, not everything, but, and then the Granos run and stuff like that. I had a look at that. That probably, you know, would have been interesting. I would have watched the November 9, because I've not watched it the last couple of years.
And I'm not going to watch it now.
No,
this final table is horrible.
Screw poker. Screw it.
I watched it last year. I put it, dude, like the November 9 here in Spanish, like, I'm not joking. It was like literally some chick from a telenovela and some other guy who had clearly never played poker doing the announcing on ESPN for 10 hours. And it was like, he has glasses on. That shows he's scared. That's why this bet is not working. See? And then, like, it would just be, like, the guy has tens, and, like, he gets, like, five bet. And, like, you know, he, like, raises, and it gets five bet. By the time it gets back to him, it's like, well, I wouldn't fold the tens here. Tens are pretty good. You know, like, it's hard to get a pair. But, yeah, it was... Yeah, I haven't watched it any year except for, like, that one in the last, like, seven or something. Actually, since 2000, I don't know, I haven't, 2006, my friend had Jamie Gold's run on at his house, and I fell asleep, and I haven't watched, like, main event final table since.
Yeah. Just another note from myself on, like, that feedback. It was constructive. We thanks for listening. It was all positive. The only reason I read it out is because he said I was super witty and sharp as well. that was otherwise I would have just deleted it, you know. But I do take on board, and yeah, we try not to come across too negative. But also, like Alex said, our show is, there are so many poker podcasts out there and other options and stuff. And a lot of the ones I listened to was like, oh, like, let's speak about the week's news in poker, tournament results, this guy won this, that, and then, you know, there was maybe a guest on or something like that. This is, I've done all the in-depth interviews with all the guys before, you know, Helmuth, etc., and Alex was on the show a couple of times, and it naturally happened, it came about, and a lot of people would email me in, and I said, well, why don't we do like a Q&A thing with just Alex every week, and we did it. And we've got real good, you know, listenership, hardcore following and stuff, and everybody seems to enjoy it, you know, including the guy that sent in this now. He's listened to a few of them and really enjoys them. And I think you've got to do something different. I mean, this is what we do. If it's news and discussion about the latest tournament wins or things like that, then there's other places, you know, for that. But if you try and be everything, then we sort of lose sort of like what we are. So it's going to continue me and Alex talking listeners' questions and sometimes, you know, we can't promise. Sometimes there will be a 35-minute rant and then half an hour questions or whatever. And also, a lot of the rants do happen with a lot of the questions that the guys listen in. So we do hope it's all relevant. And we know that a lot of people do get it from, because a lot of you guys keeps get something from the podcast, rather, because a lot of you keep sending in questions again. A lot of the same faces and stuff I see, even on Twitter in the emails when they pop up. So thanks for all that as well.
And
we will try and keep it a little bit more sort of balanced, as we say.
Oh, my bad. I didn't mean to talk over you. And thank you to everybody. By the way, a ton of you came up to me in Vegas just to say thanks, and that was pretty cool. And you all, you 99% of you gave really constructive criticism, which I'm not really used to in my life. I'm used to, like, I'm used to, you know, this is awesome, but this is why it sucks, which did happen a couple times, which was funny. But, yeah, it was a thank you guys for coming up. And it seemed overwhelmingly positive, the reviews and just people liking the different. There was a lot of people who came up to me and was like, man, when I started listening to your show, I thought you were a total douche, but I really like it now. And it's like, thanks. Like, what am I supposed to say to that? Like, but yeah, it was pretty cool. Thank you guys. I appreciate it.
And okay, on that note, we will go into the listener questions. We do have tons in since Alex has been away. So the next few shows should be ramped up, but do keep sending them in because we will get around to them eventually. Questions at oneouter.com on email, or tweet them to @oneouter.com, or post them in the Facebook group, obviously. Okay, Alex, first question in a few weeks. You ready?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay. Hi, guys. I wanted to ask yourself and Alex advice on the next podcast, if you can fit it in. I won a satellite package into the UKIPT Bristol online, essentially for nothing. It's in 2 weeks. I've played a few small live tournaments, £20 to £100 buy-in, five to be exact, but I'm a bit nervous as the buy-in to this is £770, which is way over anything I've played in before. Is there any advice you can give me for someone who has never played with this level of competition? I know I'll be fumbling chips, but hopefully I'll not be making too many mistakes and a tit of myself. Also, when is the best time to reg? There is day 1A and day 1B. These are elementary questions to most, but I play online. I'm going to enjoy myself and not worry too much as I won the entry, but it would be nice to give it my best. If you can fit it in, Barry, it would be great. If not, no problem at all. Thanks, Dom. That's from Dominic McAvoy.
Couldn't fit it in, sorry. But yeah. He's so apologetic. If you could possibly put this in.
Well, I juggled this one in because it was in 2 weeks, and he sent me that, I think, at the weekend there. So I said we'd discuss it this show so he gets it before the,
that was uncharacteristically plays. Thoughtful of you, Barry.
Yeah, very, very. Yeah.
No, I mean, these aren't elementary questions. Otherwise, I wouldn't see so many so-called pros botch it. I see pros face live tournaments with one of two attitudes, one of which is like, okay, this is the be-all, end-all that's going to save my life. And, you know, they're just way too tight and they're not playing their typical game. And the other is just like, I'm not going to take this seriously, man. I'm a poker player, in which case they're, you know, they do this thing. They, like, open, they get 3-bet, and they're like, I would normally fold online, but it's live and I'm bored, you know, so I'm going to call. And then they just go down the rabbit hole and they bust, and then they're, like, real crotchety after a few events, and their backer's going, maybe this wasn't a good use of my $400,000, I think. But, there's a couple of things. Either one, you look at this as an experience. Oh, and sorry, the day 1A, day 1B. Day 1A almost always is the softest. I don't know what it is. It just always seems to be. A lot of people. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, Alex. Yeah, I will cut you off. But maybe you were right. Yeah. I was thinking that as well. Day 1A, is it not because, like, well, from my, a lot of them are Friday, Saturday, Sunday, especially in the UK. And so the day 1A, say, is like the Thursday, say.
Yeah.
And day 1B is the Friday. So pros and people traveling to the event and spending money would obviously rather have day 1B and then just one night's hotel if they qualify, you know, to the next day, rather than, you know, play the Thursday and then
sit
around for a day, hang out, and stay another night and, like, keep their expenses up. It's just what I always used to think.
And
I always picked one.
There's a couple things. You got to ask, where are all the players coming from, all the recreational players coming from? So, excuse me, what I should have said is it's always day 1A in Vegas or any other place where most of the people are just driving up to the casino. If it's on a weekend, they just kind of want to get it out. They just want to play, you know. So, the first day, I'm excited. And I'm in business, so this isn't what I normally do. If it's on a weekend, that's usually better because that's obviously when the recreational players can play. And then if people are traveling to it, you want to look at, what day, how are they going to save money? Is it easier to travel out on a weekend, etc. But use your head. I'm just kidding. No, but like I asked somebody like what day should you register, and a guy answered that way. I was like, okay, cool. Like a guy not in the conversation. But as far as like you either have to treat this as like an experience. You need to treat this as an experience or you need to sell the seat. There's really nothing in between. If you're trying, I recently read this book. It was called The Only Way to Win, and it was a pretty presumptuous title, but it really spoke to me. And this guy's a performance coach, and he has like a tennis school, right? And he starts off the book with his like proclamation to his tennis school, which was like, and I'm paraphrasing heavily here. He goes, I don't care about your tennis. I want you to be a good tennis players. I want you to enjoy your tennis, but your tennis is not really what I care about. What I care about is you use tennis to become better people. We are trying to become better people. We are trying to build character and then having our sport flow from that. And I've always, I have never said it very eloquently as this gentleman does. I think his name is Jim Lohr, does in his book. But if you look at it as this is an experience, this is a life experience, this is going to build character in me, being able to play this. And if you are blessed enough to go deep to be able to, like, hold your crap together and play as well as you could possibly do, I think that is a real building. That's a real like building technique as far as your character. And I think also it's just going to help you focus in other areas in life as you've had this experience of going deep in a tournament and trying to keep like presence of mind. So if you're going in and looking at it as a life experience, as in something you are going to enjoy, I don't think there's a way you can lose. Even if it goes like really bad, you can look at it as a way of like, okay, this is how I'm going to deal with something that's really bad, which, let's be honest, isn't really going to hurt you at all. This is something that does not hurt. This is not, if you lose this entry, it really means nothing. If you piss and moan for 3 days, you'll learn something pretty valuable about yourself. If you didn't play your best and you just kind of hung around for 2 days, you're going to learn something about yourself as well. If you really just try to execute in every decision, the money, forgetting the money, I think you're going to really experience your character in a different way. And I think that's how you will really enjoy this. And pretend the money's gone. Pretend you're most likely going to bust and not cash, so expect it. But if you just treat it like a free roll if you get deep in anything.
I totally agree with that. And it's from myself, you know, Alex has played EPTs, final table, big tournaments, shit like that. Like, I've played a few live tournaments, and the best, you know, I've done is, for like those type of things is like a third, and like smaller live tournaments, like what you're speaking about, like you've played £50 to £100 buy-in. You know, I've won a couple of them and stuff, but I remember playing my first 550 buy-in, and I wasn't nervous or anything like that, but I invested too much personally in it. Like, I thought this was my time. You know,
that's
a
great point.
I just thought, this is it. This is written, you know, in the start. Like, I'm going to win this and, you know, la, 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 and whatever. And I bought in cash £550 when my net worth was literally, like, probably £2,000. You know what I mean? And I just bought in thinking, oh, this is garbage. I'm going to, like, oh, final table it definitely the way I'll play this and that. I'd been playing poker, like, I don't know, probably a year and a half, 2 years. And I made day two, and that gave me further delusions. And then, yeah, I can't even remember my exit hand now, which is good, because I remembered it all the time. And it was just, like, one of these things that, like Alex says, don't invest too much in it. Like, don't build your hopes up too much. And I don't mean don't be positive. Just be, like, yeah, I've qualified for this for free. Worst case scenario, I get kings firsthand, somebody's got aces, or whatever, you know, and you get, or you've got aces, somebody's got kings, you get it all in, they hit a king. And just say, if that happened, it's cost you whatever it costs you to qualify, you got a story, worst case, you can come home, play online, and whatever, and you can chalk it up to, like, experience. But yeah, just go there, but also don't be frightened to play your game. There'll be a lot of other people there that have qualified as well. There'll be people playing way above their bankroll. There'll be people that are staked. You know, when you said the level of competition, you'll probably be actually surprised if you play online a lot, like the standard of some of the play and some of the things you'll see. There's definitely going to be some, like, middle-aged guy just splashing chips around and calling off and stuff. Like, there's always people like that at tables in these live games. So good luck, and yeah, just don't beat yourself up if you go there and you don't. It's not all what you think it to be, because I played a few of those bigger buy-in tournaments, £500 up to like £1,000 World Series of Europe event, and they were all damp squibs to me. But looking back, you know, it was just what it was. It was just variance. You know, it was just like, you can't expect to play one tournament and win. You know, people do, but statistically, it's not going to be you, sort of thing. You know, people buy the 1 week, everybody wins the lottery, sort of thing. It's that mentality. Yeah. So, and when I started playing more and more, and I went to Vegas and played a few, like, I got, you know, a third in two tournaments there and fifth in a nightly. So that wasn't me playing any better or anything like that. It was me running better in situations. And so just play good, make good decisions, and see where it all falls without using any, like, Mike Sexton cliches or whatever. Just, yeah, like, you know, hope all your cards are live and stuff like that. But yeah, I don't think you're doing that, but you're saying, like, nervous and things like that. It's fumbling. You know, there will be a bit of that if you're not used to, you know, when it posts the antes and stuff. You'll probably get reminded to put your ante in a couple of times and whatever, but just enjoy it, you know, and yeah, good luck to you.
You made a really good point. Like, I was thinking of, like, when I was, like, 19, I was, like, I was thinking of, like, was there ever a tournament where I was, like, it was written, right? And I was, like, APPT Manila, like, the first ever Asian poker tournament, whatever. I showed up, and I thought, like, you know, like, this is my time, right? And yeah. I was, like, I was not taking the tournament seriously, and I kept going deeper in it. And I guess this could be a testament to, like, you know, not taking things too seriously, just, like, having fun, trying to play the best you can. And then, but at the same time, like, you know, I was, like, it is, like, I was on a heater. I was the only one from my area who became a professional. Not only had I become a pro, but, like, I struggled greatly the first year, but, like, there came a point where I just, like, couldn't lose at MTP. It's, like, I'd just been building up my game every day. And, like, I just, you know, I showed up and I thought it was going to happen. And then I finished 14th. And then at the first Latin American poker tournament, I had all the chips again. And I lost, like, this huge three-outer. Like, I opened to, like, 2.5x. The guy shoved 40x. I called. He had ace-7 off. I had ace-queen suited. Obviously, 7 on the river. And then it was You know, and that whole, like, thinking, like, this is my time is what ruined me. It wasn't those deep finishes. Those were actually, like, you know, those were it was amazingly educational going that deep, you know, and, like, learning, right? But all I could focus on is, like, man, I almost final tabled the first, like, two tournaments in this area. And in these areas, and, like, in my mind, it should have happened. I think the reason I did that is I was comparing myself to, like, the best in the game. And here's the thing you got to remember. It's, like, the best in the game, a lot of the quote-unquote best in the game, okay, I work with a lot of them after their quote-unquote prime, which really can be boiled down to their big win. This is how it goes for 90% of them. Like, if I told you the names of some of my clients, you would be flabbergasted if they were broke, right? But, like, they get their big win. They pay out more to taxes than you could ever know. A lot of them had backers, and that's the only reason they were in that tournament. You don't even have a backer. You're ahead of them on that front. And then they just started playing anything and everything because, oh, yeah, now I'm a great poker player. And, of course they weren't bad, but they weren't that good either. And then, you know, variance happened, and they were broke. And you got to remember, most of the guys you've seen, like, in the last couple of years, like, win money, a lot of them aren't going to be around in a couple more years. Either they're going to lose most of their money and quit, they're going to lose all their money, or it's very rare you see a guy just keep stacking wins on top of each other. That's very rare. And you shouldn't compare yourself to them. If anything, you should be inspired by them, because most of those guys I know, Ape Styles has 5 6-figure scores, I think, this year. He's been playing poker for 10 years, and he's having his, like, breakout year, right? Most people have their breakout year, their first, like, 2 years, when they're really enthusiastic, right? I was like, you know, John, what are you up to? And he's like, studying for a week. You know, got to work on some things. And it's like, you know, that's, like, the top, and there's not very many of them. Everybody else you're comparing yourself to probably just ran well. You know, and don't, you know, if anybody gives you a hard time about fumbling your chips or whatever, know that, okay, I'm a real professional. I know real professionals. We would never begrudge you or make fun of you for that. We know how it is. We were all there, and we want you to have a good time just as much as we want to have a good time. And if anybody's giving you a hard time, they're losers. They're not poker players. They're showing you their weakness. Just remember that and have a good time.
Definitely. Good luck, Dom. He's emailed in a few questions, and I know he's a regular listener and sharer of the onehour.com gospel. So, hallelujah.
I think I think he sent me a book that's incredible. I think it was, what's his name? Dominic
McAvoy.
Dom sent it in.
Dominic McAvoy.
He sent a book with a mutual friend of ours to PCA so I could read it. It was, like, the coolest thing ever. And I was, usually when people give me books, I read it for, like, 40 pages and I go, wow, this is garbage. Right. And then, excuse me, guys, I'm a little sick today. But this book was, it's called Bounce. It's about purposeful practice. And it's like, there's one section in the book that I find a little silly, but the rest of it is just rock solid. It is crazy. It's just, it takes every, like, prodigy on earth and proves they weren't really prodigies. They usually worked like 10,000 hours, right? And he goes, this goes exactly into what you guys talk about on One Outer. And there was stuff like, the one that was most fascinating was, like, you know, he just takes subtle assumption after subtle assumption and proves it's actually a result of hard work. And the one he ends on is Kenyans are genetically the best long distance runners, which I think a bunch of us all, like, kind of have assumed because they're all, you know, he starts with, like, those of African ascent are the best long distance runners. And then he goes, is that really true? Have you ever seen anyone from Western Africa do it? And you're like, well, no. How about Eastern Africa? Well, yeah. What country? Kenya. Specifically Kenya, no other country, right? And he goes, well, where are those people from in Kenya? And if you look it up, it's like most of them are from this one, like, small province that makes up like 5% of Kenya. And a guy went up there to check it out, and he found out the kids had to run to school 12 miles every day, every single day. And they were in high altitude, which meant their red blood cells carried more oxygen. So they were like, they had like 10,000 hours of practice by the time they were 18. You know, like it's not, it wasn't, you know, something they really chose, but it just went to show you, you know. And then they did the genetic tests, and they found out there was more like genetic diversity. Essentially, like the way they break it down is like if there was an apocalypse and all that was left on Earth was like one ethnicity in one country, all the biodiversity, all the genetic diversity in the world would be accumulated in that one group. So like to say like this group of people is, you know, better at this genetically. Of course, there's like certain muscle fibers and stuff that assist, but a lot of it was hard work. And it was just like, it was one of the most like motivating books I ever read. So thank you, Don, for sending that in. Huge shout out. I really appreciate that. And if sure. I got the wrong Don, you're pretty cool too, guy, whoever this is. But yeah.
The wrong Dom. That sounds like a rap album. Yeah.
sounds like a bad night in the Ukraine talking to the wrong gangster.
Yeah. Okay, next question is from George. Hey, Alex. I'm looking at possibly going pro after I graduate this summer. I love the game and I find it comes naturally to me. I have a ROI of 58% over 1,000 tournaments, with an average stake of $11 whilst doing my degree. I, however, have concerns about the lack of socializing and isolation posed by online and even live poker. How much do you think this is true of poker, and how do you overcome that isolation? I love to socialize, so maybe a normal job would suit me better.
Well, there's a lot to unload in this question. Okay, first off, 1,000 tournaments, nothing. 58% ROI, very comforting. Was it all concentrated in one win? And remember, that could really skew your perspective. I'm not trying to dissuade you. It's just, I don't know. Like, becoming a professional poker player is still something, like, every single day I think of, was that the right decision? You got to remember, like, I'm at the tip of the iceberg when it comes to like success in poker, because it does take a toll on you. Like, to become as good as you want to become in poker, it's like a lot of work. And I know a lot of my colleagues are like, I'm not playing well, I'm gonna study 60 hours this week. And it's like, you know, and that's not like, I'm starting to think that's normal, you know what I mean? I used to be the cyborg because of how much I studied. And, you know, it was just only out of this, like, deep-seated insecurity. And, like, now that's, like, pretty average. Like, so there's a lot more work than I think a lot of people realize. But if you want to go pro, I assume you're young. I assume you don't have dependents, so now's the time. I just want to make sure. The reason I always ask people, like, why do you want to become a professional poker player? And 99 times out of 100, the reasons are pretty bad. The one here that really scared me was it seems to come naturally for me. There will come a time nothing will seem natural. It will seem everything could go wrong. And if things have been going pretty well thus far, and then you go pro and things go bad, it could be a pretty... it could be a pretty rough ride, but I don't want to dissuade you. I've had more fun in my life. I've had a fuller life than anyone I know because of this job. So, you know, bon voyage. But also be sure to check out, I have a free webinar that I'm going to be doing with Two Cards College on the 30th. Be sure to go to their site and you can register for it. And we're going to talk about how you can hedge your risks. And, you know, just show how you can, like, make money even when things are not going that well. And then, but yeah, as far as the social aspect in poker, I think I've led a pretty social life. I would like to think I've met a lot of people, seen a lot of different places than I ever would have if I didn't play poker. But it's just like anything, it's something you got to work at. You know, it's, and there's nothing wrong with, like, one of the most fun times in my career was at the beginning of my career, I was taking classes, like, for fun in Seattle Central Community College. And it felt a little bizarre to be there because everybody was, like, trying to, you know, everybody was trying to, like, get their degree and transfer into something. I was, yeah, I kind of felt like a fraud because I was like, I have no intention of using any of this crap, right? And, you know, if you tell, like, the average, like, 19-year-old, I'm taking finals for fun, like, they're going to be like, what? You know, like, how dare you? You know, like, in America, when you make money, it's that the game's over. What are you doing here? But, like, I had a lot of fun. I met a lot of people, like, just, you know, it was – and, it's just, like, something you got to work at. Like, you know, people are going out, and it's, like, it's one of those, I don't, like, love these people. Well, you know, just try to do it, you know, and, like, try to meet people and have fun and, like, you know, all different. Yeah, and it also helps if you can put yourself in a city that just tends to be a bit more diverse. And I don't mean that, like, just, like, racially. I just mean, like, different groups of people. And, like, you know, you can see, like, who you're fitting in with. And yeah, I like that you realize, like, live isn't super social. I've never dated a girl I met in a poker room. I've never, like, most of my good friends are not poker players. And, like, I don't know, though. Because, like, this year at Vegas, I met a lot of people who were, like, you know, like, director of general medicine at this at this one, like, hospital and stuff. And, like, those are fascinating people to talk to. But, like, at the poker table is, like, live, is, like, very good socially. But at the same time, at the same time, you are kind of there to kill each other, and you're not going to get that many hands in. So it is pretty difficult. But I would say, you know, just pick a few days. I would say, like, try to take, like, I think, like, trying to learn anything outside of poker is really good. I would say, like, try to take classes outside. They don't have to be college classes, you know. It could just be, like, canoeing or something. I don't know. Just, like, get out there and do something. And, you know, try to have, like, specific days off. It's weird because, like, for health, like, for feeling healthy, I would say 2 days off. But, like, when I was coming up, I never took 2 days off. I don't begrudge anybody who wants to work. But, like, poker's a lot more mentally taxing than most careers. So if you want to take 2 days off, I think that's pretty healthy. And then, there's also – I feel like these days there's far more tools for, like – self-employed professionals to meet people than there ever were, like, 10 years ago. Like, I can't tell you how many of my friends I know who have, like, really good relationships with their spouses, and I'm like, where'd you meet? And it's like, oh, we met, you know, on this eHarmony or whatever, right? And then, you know, and there's just, you know, just, like, try to get involved, try to, you know, hang out. And don't – every poker player's, like, social area is the pub or the bar, and it was mine for many years. But, like, the people you meet, like, doing drugs or drinking or gambling, they tend to not hang around once the money's gone, is my experience. They tend to be off, whereas, you know, if you met, like, a professional who is doing something else who happened to be in your kite flying class or something, I don't know. Like, those people tend to hang around if you guys actually do, like, bond over a coffee or something, because, like, you're not basing it on this false thing or this inebriated sense of self you have. So, it's, yeah, you know, go out there. I think you can do it. Good luck to you.
Yeah, good luck. One thing I'll add to it is, you know, I'm always careful. I mean, I played poker for a living for 2 years, but I never say, or at least if I do, it's a slip of the tongue. I am always conscious to say I wasn't a poker professional because I didn't take it professionally when I see. I think it's disrespectful, Alex. I've said this to you before.
Thank you.
To say like I was a poker professional because I wasn't. I got up and I played 180 man sitting goes for a living to make money, to grind out money. I had a few tournament wins that like kicked me up and gave me hope or whatever, but I didn't study nearly enough. You know, I when I would run bad, I would study now and again and this and that. And with the 180 mans, I got it down to just, you know, the push full charts, and I was studying them and studying them, but I wasn't going in and looking at this and breaking down hands and stuff like that. I'd effectively became someone that could push fold good, had a good, you know, I think it was like 20% ROI, and I could play 18, 20 tables, stacking them, and that was it. It made me money, you know. It did make me money, but I wasn't a poker professional. And just like this guy, when he's seen like 1,000 tournaments, this percent and that, I knew a few guys at the local casino, they would say they were, oh yeah, I'm a poker pro, this and that. And like you say, you know, they still lived at home. They never studied. They would play this now and again when they felt like it and stuff. It's like, it's still the only sort of industry, if, you know, we can call it that, that people think, oh, I'm going to be, you know, you don't go, I'm going to be a professional golfer tomorrow. You know, like, you know, after I give up uni, I might be a professional golfer. You know, and like whatever, and people compare it to golf and stuff like that, because there is, even I watched the British Open this week, and there was comparisons. You know, you're a solo player, it's tournament, etc. You get down, you know, when they had the playoff, the three-way playoff, I was like thinking, oh, it's like a three-handed sort of thing. It's like, you know, and stuff like that. But yeah, I think you sound like, you know, maybe try and play a little bit more when you've got more time. When if you, I don't know if you've been offered a job or anything, but yeah, play recreationally and maybe a part-time job, and then take it that way. And if it's meant to be, it'll naturally happen. Like your passion and work ethic for it will make you a professional. Otherwise, you'll realize that you can't do it for a living, and not everybody can do it for a living. But like Alex says, good luck to you, and let us know later in the year or that what sort of path you're on. It'd be interesting. Okay, next question, Alex. We're going to squeeze another one in. I mean, we're approaching the hour, but you have been away for a couple of weeks.
Yeah,
they've not had a podcast, so.
Sorry, I had to see my wife off.
Oh, yeah, you know, you got to do that.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That's important. Yeah. Happy wife, happy life. Now, sorry, go ahead. Yes, I'm ready for one more question. Let's do it. Let's give the people what they want.
Okay, it's another longish one. So I'm going to just read it again as it is. And it is Alex. My name is Ross Leitz, or Leitz, L-E-I-T-Z, SpamBX on Twitter. We interact quite frequently. I'm at the point where I have reached a dilemma due to several common factors I'm sure you see in the low-stakes tournaments and cash. Just a little background. I've been playing since 2003, played cash exclusively from 2003 to 2010 or so. From 2010, my online and live tournament sample is not even close to being proper sized to determine long-term success nor measure actual long-term ability. I know I have many leaks in my game that need repairing. Also, strengthening the foundation of my game wouldn't hurt. The transition from live cash to live online tournaments has not been easy, but I still need to learn. I feel I have fallen behind the curve in many aspects. Lack of discipline and poor bankroll management have been my Achilles heel, as well as going through the normal course of variance, as well as overall mediocre play. All combined is a disaster many times over. I'm fighting mental illness is a daily battle as well. My question to you is, what do you feel would be best for me at this stage as far as learning and studying? I did watch your Card Runners video on how to study. I believe that videos are more than likely a very good starting point. But further beyond that, as well as, should I just focus on one aspect of No Limit Hold'em just now? I normally play PLO cash and hold'em tournaments with the occasional PLO tourney. Bovada is the main site I play on because of the scheduling guarantees. Cash game traffic is usually pretty good, unless regs, although can't be identified. their play will speak for them. Deciding on whether to focus on tournaments or cash, my bankroll isn't sufficient enough to withstand consistently losing 3 to 5 buy-ins per day in tournaments, or on good days, less than $200 in return. If I do decide tournaments, I would definitely be interested in getting some coaching over Skype to see what we can come up with. I think I know the answer, but as you can tell from this email, confidence is an issue. I understand variance can be brutal, but coupled with lack of bankroll, mediocre play, I have to make changes if I'm going to continue to play tournaments for now. Any advice is much appreciated. Yours, Ross.
Always good to end the show on a high note, but like... Well, first of all, what I'm going to tell you, man, is like a lot of poker players feel the exact way you're feeling. Like that... Like, there's a lot of times, like, and I'm just doing this to paint a picture, not to brag, but I will be in the home I own, sitting on my leather couches, watching a TV show for, like, a minute. I never watch TV, right? I'm always, like, working or reading or studying something, and I'll be like, I should be watching a training video. You know what I mean? I'm like, the fact I'm not watching a training video shows I'm not a real pro, right? Like, I'm not, I don't have discipline. Like, I'm not, man, that's why I'm struggling lately, man. I've lost that fire, whatever, right? And it's hard, like, you've been playing since 2003. I probably started playing at 2003, 2004, too. So we've been playing almost as long. The big thing is, man, first of all, you're all over the place. Talking about PLO, you're talking about tournaments, you know, you started in cash, but that's fine. I mean, I understand people need to transition. You need to find your bread and butter game, right? And this is never something you're going to, like, walk away from. I just got home from playing, like, 10K tournaments, and, you know, I made some mistakes. I ran really bad a few times. And, you know, I come home, and I got to play 1-2 no limit. You know, like, that's life. I play 1-2 no limit. I play $50 MTTs. I was playing for 5-figure buy-ins. You know, every table had $90,000 at it. Now I'm playing, you know, like, first place is $2,000, and that's what I got to do, man. I got to rustle up some buy-ins, and then I got to do it again. I mean, that's the whole thing, man. You got to get your show on the road. And, I mean, there's a lot of... you know, what I think you're doing is a lot like our other guys. You're comparing yourself to, like, who's the best in the field. Or, like, a friend of yours who's doing, like, pretty well right now. Those are, like, the tip of the top of the spear, you know? Top of the iceberg, whatever you want to say. And what really is more important is you just keep the show on the road. Nothing ever happens if you just quit, right? Now, that doesn't mean you got to be 100% focused every day. But everything's got to have a purpose. Are you taking time off? If you're going to take time off, you got to really make sure that it's, like, worthwhile. Like, is it going to really, like, rejuvenate you? Are you, like, sitting around, like, watching sports, like, drinking beers? Well, here you're just in front of another screen. You're taking in an intoxicant, which is shown to they show in, like, oh, you going out with your boys, right? You know, binge drinking is shown to make kids, like, perform worse on tests, like a university students, a week after the binge. So no doubt that's hurting your poker play. You sound a little depressed. Here's my advice when you're depressed. Stop taking depressants. I know this is, like, this sounds like brain surgery, right? I'm depressed. Stop taking depressants. Where did you get your degree in medicine, Alex? That's genius. But nobody ever does it, because you know what the depressants are marijuana and alcohol. And nobody ever wants to quit it. There was a time I felt just like you, man. And it's like, I got nothing against weed and liquor. I loved them growing up. But at some point, I was like, yo, man, I can't. I play a mind sport, as some people call it, and this crap is messing with me. I feel depressed all the time, you know. If I don't feel depressed, I feel anxious. So I started I cut it out. I just completely cut it out. You know what I mean? And, like, yeah, you're gonna get some pushback for that from your boys. At first, but, like, trust me, like, the real people in your life are going to really respect it. Like, and you don't, the great thing about quitting drinking is you can always start drinking again if, you know, you're at some point in your life. But think of all the non-drinking prop bets you hear from Cal42688, Daniel Negreanu, Jason Mercier, Gavin Smith when he was on the scene. There's a reason that people do that, you know what I mean? It's certainly not as fun, but it does help you when you're in a rut just to get your crap together. And if you feel like you have to drink that, I mean, there's addicts who only drink once a year. You know, if you feel like you have to drink, that's a problem, man. And if you're trying to stop and you can't stop, you should just try to stop to see if you can do it. You know what I mean? Because a lot of guys I find who think it's not a problem, you tell them, stop for 2 weeks and I'll give you this amount of money, right? Or this incentive, and they were like, yeah, I couldn't do it. It's like, well, now this is a pretty big problem. The other thing is, you know, just keep the show on the road. That means, like, every day, like, watching something, thinking about something, taking notes on something. Try to focus on one thing at a time. Try to focus on one game at a time, one bread-and-butter game. Try to play as competently and focused as you can for as long as you can. And you got to get money coming in from something else. That may mean taking a job. A lot of people don't like it, but you got to – but, I mean, I consider my consulting work a job. It's certainly not as fun as playing cards all day and sitting around and listening to Outkast albums. But, like, it's what I do. You know, like, I got to take a job, and I love my job, but it's still a job. You know, if you have skills in something else and you can make money there, there's no shame in going to that. If you don't have skills, you got to get raked back. You might want to do, like, affiliate marketing. I mean, maybe you can write. Maybe you can write articles for websites. You just got to come up with something, you know what I mean, to have money coming in. Or you just got to move down, like, further than you've ever moved down before. I love it when I play, like, $20 or $30 sit-and-goes, or I play, like, you know, I went down to, at one point, my game had gotten so bad, I went to play 50 NL. And, like, a lot of people, you know, would be like, you know, what the hell are you doing playing 50 NL? It's not about that, man. It's about, like, you know, having fun and making a little money. That's it. I mean, that's all I've ever looked at this as. If you can make a lot of money, that's great. But, like, I don't know, every time I've tried to make a lot of money, I've made no money. And every time I've tried to make a little money but try to, like, grow as a person, I've made a lot of money. So, you know, you can take from that what you can take from that. One of the smartest things I heard in Vegas, I was listening to Thinking Poker podcast. I hate giving them press. You all should be listening to One Outer and never, ever tell me that Thinking Poker is number one and One Outer is number two. One is in the title. But, like, Carlos Welch has, like, he had, like, one of the best views ever. He's like, man, I could play higher, but I just don't have fun. He's like, you know, like, it's not cool to me. It's not a good time. You know, I'm trying to, like, have fun and, like, learn, you know what I mean? And then, you know, I'm paraphrasing heavily, but he made a good point because it's like you can't learn. You can't learn if you're, like, worried about the money, you know what I mean? So if you can if you got, like, a big bankroll right now, or not even, like, a big bankroll, if you have $10,000, right, I would say take, like, $7,000, put that in savings, and, like, you know, try to, like, live below your means. Like, try to, you know, it's all right to move to a smaller place. It's all right to, like, rough it a bit. I did it as, you know, like, 5 years ago, like, I was living in, like, a mansion with a private beach and, like, maids and cooks and stuff. And, like, I went bust, though. I still had some money. I probably could have borrowed money from my friends and kept, you know, balling up. But I was like, yo, man, I'm going to go to an inner city apartment. And I'm going to get back in this, man. I went in. I played 50 NL. I was in a worse apartment than I'd ever been in my life. We have the pictures on my blog somewhere. You can look it up. Like, put San Jose grind hole. Poker head rush is what I called the post.
Oh, but that was romantic, Alex.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, right. Yeah, but I mean, like, if you got to rough it, you got to rough it, right? Be sure to be, like, I mean, I'm a big proponent of, like, be sober, get your life together, give yourself up to Christ, son, but you gotta get out there and, like, experience other things as well. Like, don't be afraid to, like, I don't know what you like, if you, a lot of people like thinking, a lot of people like doing. If you like doing, you know, find something you used to like. Did you like working on cars with your dad? Why don't you go take a class in, like, auto repair? You know what I mean? It doesn't mean you have to, like, get a job in it. But, like, maybe just being around other gearheads all day and talking shop and working on something and seeing something be built up that can't be taken away by variance, maybe that's going to make you feel better. If you're more of a thinker, why not go to a cafe? Why not go to a bookstore and just, like, chill out? You know what I mean? Get a coffee. Like, read something. Read about anything. You know what I mean? And then when you come back to poker, you're more refreshed because you're away from a screen. You're away from just, like, the focus of your life is these cards. You know what I mean? And then I can't emphasize enough the avoiding the depressant, man. I can't. Like, if you're a depressive person, and a lot of us are, man, I mean, it sounds like, you know, it doesn't sound like brain surgery, but you expose yourself to a depressant, that's what's going to happen. I've been working a lot with, you also brought up mental illness, man. There's nothing wrong with getting a legion of professionals. There's the word I was looking for. But get a legion of professionals, man. Like, when my career, like, fell apart, like, 5-6 years ago, I went stone broke. Like, I went to every doctor I could, man, because I was like, yo, man, I'm trying to quit smoking weed and drinking beer, and, like, I can't do it. And then, like, it wasn't beer after a while. It was full fists, you know, and I wasn't doing that well. And it was like, you know, so I started drinking at 8 p.m., I started drinking at 6 p.m., I started drinking at 4 p.m., soon it's like noon. I'm like, you know, I'm just getting wasted. My life is over. You know, I'm done. I've ruined my career. And, you know, I had to go, yo, man, I can't handle this. I need help. You know, and it's like, there's nothing like the bravest people I knew worked the steps, right? The bravest people I knew, like, went to, you know, it was like, it wasn't easy. I'll be honest with you, it took like a year or two before I felt like really good. And like, you didn't say you were an addict or anything, but just it, I bring this up because a lot of people listening are, you know, and I find a lot of poker players come to me because they feel depressed. And I'm like, all right, how much do you smoke or drink? They're like, how'd you know? And it's like, well, you know, I really need another analogy. It doesn't take a brain surgeon. It does not take a rocket scientist. But, I went to a lot of different people, and it wasn't, you know, I went to, and by the way, there's really crappy psychologists. There's like really crappy psychiatrists. And, if you don't know the difference between the two, psychologists help you through talk therapy. Psychiatrists can actually prescribe you most medications. I think psychologists have a certain amount that they can prescribe, whereas others they can't. And in psychiatry, I believe you need to actually get a medical degree first, like you have to study medicine first. But just because I didn't know this stuff when I got into it, I want you guys to know. But by the way, don't be surprised if you have to go through a lot of different doctors. Every time I'm at a poker table and I meet like a medical care professional, I always go, my favorite question to ask them is, what percentage of your colleagues, what percentage of people who work in your field are incompetent? And psychologists without fail will say 70 to 80%. They'll say like incompetent should not be doing their job. Okay, so expect – now, I know this is one of those weird things because you're trusting someone almost with your life, and then I'm telling you 4 out of 5 of them are incompetent. But, like, you're going to have to go through a lot of people, and I did have to go through a lot of people. I fired a lot of therapists. I fired a lot of psychologists. I say fired because I am paying them. A lot of them will try to make you feel like you need them. Don't – remember, like, they're working for you. They're there to help you, right? And the best ones will make it very clear they're there for you. It's not the other way around, right? And, you know, it wasn't until, like, I got a team of neurologists, two neurologists, who, you know, I really got the medication that really helped me. And it wasn't like an immediate help. It was like just at the beginning, I was like, I feel like I can handle this. I still feel like sick and I don't feel that good, but I feel like I can handle this. That's all you're looking for. That's all you can hope for in the first like month or two, you know, of like recovering from a mental illness, recovering from an addiction or something like that. Getting that under control should be your first priority. And then after that, there's these supplements I've been using that help quite a bit. I would really recommend MCT oils. I've been doing it for like 2 months. It's essentially, it's like coconut oil essentially, but like it's pretty high on saturated fat, so you don't want to drink a lot of it. But if you just feel like, my doctor friends are like really into it, and they like hate everything. They think everything is BS, and they're like, you know, you just put a little in your coffee in the morning or in a smoothie if you're not a coffee guy, and it just it works as an appetite suppressant. It makes you feel a little more alert. You feel just a little more collected, and I found that really really helped me, because like just recovering and like let's be honest, a lot of the psychotropic medication leaves you pretty like spent. And you do, a lot of people stop using it because of that. And this is something that really alleviates the symptoms. If you're having anxiety, like really severe anxiety, I mean, the herbal teas like work pretty well. There's something I've been using from Onnit Labs. It's called like serotonin. What is it called? If you look it up, there's one that specifically says it's like for serotonin, right? And it's essentially like I've been using that quite a bit when I'm just like really edgy, and like nothing has ever brought me down from these points, right? When I'm really edgy, like any of that stuff that's supposed to help you has not helped me. This real Onnit Labs, O-N-I-T, I think. But like they also make a supplement called Alpha Brain, which is what a bunch of poker players told me like really helped them like focus in Vegas. I tried it. I didn't really feel much of a difference. I wasn't into it, but I tried this other thing they had, and it works really well. And I would really recommend that, like, as a bit more of a natural way to take care of your anxiety. I mean, like, I usually hate when I hear, like, this is natural, man. But essentially, it's just, it's a lot of different stuff that, like, if you had in tea form, you could get a very weak version of it. But this will just, in my case, it just really brought me down from the edge a lot of the times. And that really helps. So, and yeah, man, it feels like you're not doing much. It feels like it's so slow. It feels like it's not working. You feel like every time you're studying, you're not really getting much. You feel like I only got this one thing. It wasn't even that big. I didn't feel like I get anything from this. And then like one day you look around, your whole life's changed. Like nothing feels like it's changing right at the time, you know? I mean, this goes for like every walk of life, man. I've talked to like bands who've made it. I've talked about people who've launched their own like clothing labels. I've talked to, you know, like a lot of different people who've become successful, and a lot of them describe like 10 years, man, like 10 years of feeling like it wasn't going anywhere. Just like showing up, getting rejected, not having it work out. You got 10 years in, you know, just got to make sure you keep, you know, it could take another 10 years. I mean, honestly, but it's a little more likely it's going to happen a little sooner because you have that experience and you just got to make sure you're capitalizing on it. The lessons you learn now are going to be so much more profoundly effective because you'll have this wealth, this well of millions of hands to cross-check it with and to know if it's right or wrong. And if it will, you know, remember to keep an open mind, but it can be very, with your experience advantage, with new, like, cutting-edge concepts, you have a real good shot of, like, making it work in this chosen field. So best of luck to you.
Yeah, good luck to you, and try and take it easy. Okay, Alex, you want to tell people a little bit about your webinar that you've been talking about, and I know you put back the launch date because you got back from Vegas late.
Oh, yeah, we're going to be doing a webinar called How to Become a Professional Poker Player, and it's just going to be about, actually, I'm going to unroll more of the details soon, but, like, essentially, it's just going to be about, like, how you can make money as a professional poker player, and it's just about, I think it's probably going to be the more, like, one of the more, like, meaningful webinars I do, and I think, because it's just going to be, like, I realize, like, in my head, I think of myself as, like, a junk man, you know what I mean? Like, when I play poker, I make the junk hands work. When I make money, it's, like, you know, just making, like, some junky situations work, right? And it's, like, a million little, like, drips going into this one trough, but, like, it all fills up at the end. It's, like, well, maybe we should break down how you can make that money from, like, rake back and consulting and affiliate work and writing and, like, also, like, what are the best games to, like, make money at and what sites and stuff like that. It's like, and, yeah, you know, if you guys want to be in touch, you know, write us at assassinatocoaching@gmail.com. Also, be sure to follow me at The Assassinato on Twitter, and just, you know, be sure to look at that for details. And, yeah, you know, if you want to be on the mailing list, write us at assassinatocoaching@gmail.com, and we'll let you know when it's about to be out. I also have a webinar coming up on the 30th with Two Cards College. It's going to be free to everyone. It's just going to be about, like, how you should approach, like, being backed. If you are looking for backing, what you should be looking for. And I just got to look at, like, I'm working pretty closely, like, with the Russian whiz of backing. And, like, I was looking at his material he wanted me to incorporate with this webinar, and it is incredible, man. I can't wait to present this. That's going to be on the 30th. Sure to go to Two Cards College website, and we're going to be able, you know, you're going to be able to sign up, and it's totally free. And, yeah, you know, we got a lot of stuff coming out. So, you know, be sure to follow me on pokerheadrush.com. We got, like, new articles coming out all the time there, you know, facebook.com/assassinato. I have a fan site on Facebook, but I can't remember what it's called. Twitter at The Assassinato, and be sure to follow me on Twitch. We're going to be trying to do more sessions on Twitch. You know, come listen some good hip hop, some good metal. You know, watch me play cash, man. Watch, like, these big bluffs and stuff, and watch me play deep in MTTs at America's Card Room, twitch.tv/TheAssassinato. And be sure, and if you sign up for America's Card Room with the rake back link, be sure to write me after you've deposited at assassinatocoaching@gmail.com. Tell me your login name, your screen name, all that good stuff, and you'll get a free copy of either Dissecting the Donk Bet, You Flat Too Much, or That's a Check Raise, Fool. So, you know, and be sure to sign up for Card Runners. Use promo code FREEMONTH, all capital letters. Used to be $180 to sign up. Now it's $30 for 2 months. So be sure to check that out. I got a new series coming out called How to Study. It's all getting into the nitty gritty of everything we're talking about here. So, yeah, be sure to check all that out.
Cool. And keep your questions coming in for Alex for next show. Questions@oneouter.com, or post them on the Facebook group, or tweet @oneouter.com on Twitter. We hope this was a good show for you coming back, and we got the balance right of ranting and poker content. And we'll see you for episode 51 next time. Cheers.
Cheers.
Million Dollar Sundays are here to stay. Playing a $1 million tournament is now a regular thing with the Million Dollar Sundays. Coming on Sunday, August 2nd at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, we're hosting a $1 million guaranteed, no-limit Texas Hold'em tournament, where the winner walks away with $200,000. This is our third Million Dollar tourney with more lined up in the future. You're going to love the Million Dollar Sundays tournament with daily free rolls to win your seat for free, tons of satellites to qualify for a fraction of the cost, and free bank wires for the top 9 finishers. Don't miss your chance to win part of the $1 million guaranteed. Qualify today for the $1 million Sundays Poker Tournament. AmericasCardRoom.com.